Culture Meltdown.
And that, Lou, is the base angles theorem for the isosceles triangle. It was just that simple.
I did not
know
that.
It was just that simple, Lou.
Thank you.
It's Pop Culture Meltdown. Chris Libertini, Lou Pellegrino.
Hi.
There he is.
How's it going?
Making it happen, Louie.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up on the show, we talk Tetris. We talk Men in Black.
This music kind of sounds like it could be from Tetris.
A little bit. A little bit.
A little bit of a Russian vibe to it.
A little bit. Talk Tetris, we talk Fortnite, we talk Men in Black, and we talk, obviously, Luke Skywalker.
Oh, boy.
And we actually have John Batchelor coming in studio. I know nobody can believe it.
No.
I know nobody can believe it. How did we get him? What did we have to do? Actually, I got John Batchelor's phone number last night.
Did you really?
I got 7 digits.
Wow. It might be the greatest phone number you've ever acquired.
I mean, it's pretty amazing. We've already been texting today. It's a big day for me.
Oh, boy.
It's a big day. I want to get right to this, though.
What do these texts consist of?
It's actually 4 text messages, and one of them says, hold on, I'll read you the text messages. We'll go inside the mind of John Batchelor here real quick before he comes on the podcast. But literally, I thought that he had a guest this morning, and it turned out he didn't have a guest, so he just wrote, unknown. That was it.
Typical.
Unknown.
Typical John Batchelor response.
So, here's the thing. Tetris! Tetris is a game.
My favorite game.
Louis' favorite game.
Favorite video game of all time.
We've played this game all our life.
Yep.
And there are successful gamers that take tournaments. They do tournaments.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
There's tournaments for everything now.
So here's my question to you. You've got to be like a Tetris champion, and then you go to these tournaments and you defend your belt, kind of like WWE,
well, I think
WWF.
I'm sure what it is, it's an open call, and I'm sure there's a nice little fee. You could actually shoot a video of here's me playing Tetris.
Have,
look, here's
Twitch.
My final
they have,
score.
Yeah, they have this
right.
thing called Twitch, and you record yourself
right.
playing Fortnite.
Right.
Tetris. People watch it.
So I'm sure people could see that, and that's a qualifier. This video and watching this and hearing this, it's absolutely amazing. So set the scene.
Yeah. So essentially, it's the Tetris Classic Tetris World Championships. This takes place in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
Or Oregon? Oregon? Oregon?
I say Oregon.
Oregon. So the only thing I know about Oregon is Oregon Trail. Everybody ended up with dysentery. You break a wheel, you're done. So apparently these guys, they got a little better. So the CTWC is what they call it. The Classic Tetris World Championship. They go around the 1989 Nintendo version of Tetris, which came out 13 years before this guy who won was born.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy who won, the world record holder right now, is a guy by
the
name
champion.
Of the world,
world champion.
The world champion. And he's 16 years old, Joseph Saley.
Mm-hmm.
And he dethroned 7-time winner Jonas Neubauer, which is insane. Because, I mean, we're watching them play. And, you know, they said that there was a specific way that he did it. They called it a certain technology. Mm-hmm. Do you have that offhand? They were saying that...
Hyper-tap technique. Yeah, hyper-tap technique.
Which is,
I don't
honestly,
even know what that is.
It's insane. I mean, they're on level what? They're on level... Can you even see what level they're on? It's like, it says level 26.
That's the level. They're on 26 level.
So now, take me through that. You're on level 26. These things are coming fast and furious. You can't even... I'm not trying to make a Vin Diesel joke. Literally, they're coming at you ridiculously fast.
Sure, absolutely.
How do you have any time to react? Are you looking at what's coming up next? Are you looking
Both.
At what you're dealing
you're
with?
You're dealing with everything. Because you have to understand... You have to recognize the shape you need, the shape you're getting, how to rotate it, which way to rotate it, where to place it, and what's coming up next.
It sounds like one of my dates.
Of course.
Jesus, Mother and Joseph. So let's go to the time when your boy over here, the world record holder, Jonas Neubauer, finishes early. And then your boy over here, Joseph Saley.
And you keep saying world record holder, world champion.
He's a world champion.
Right.
So, but the 7-time winner Jonas Neubauer.
It's like knocking off the Montreal Canadiens in the 70s.
There you go. So let's listen to what actually happened. We're going to listen to about a minute of your boy, Saley, coming clean here.
Clean, but he couldn't get the piece. Yeah, he didn't get the piece all the way over there.
And it's being narrated, obviously, broadcast.
So now the champion has just been eliminated.
He's made it to level 32.
No, not even. The champion, he hasn't been eliminated. He finished, right?
Right, well, because his
victory here, Bob, Tetris for Joseph.
Oh, so he, but that's his score, 915, 800.
Correct.
And the kid has 847, 260.
Right.
He held out. Boom. Patrick for Jones.
Jonas is out.
Can he do it?
He's up about 33,000 points right now.
Change will do it.
The shapes keep dropping, and now he's trying to set up.
He's trying to set up a Tetris.
Right.
How's this going to play out? Oh, okay,
that's perfect, perfect, perfect. It's set up now.
Now he's AR.
He's 22,000 away.
17-piece trap. There's the low bar.
And there it is. The Tetris, and he just stops. He wins by 19,000 points.
Champion, 16-year-old. Joseph Saley has done it.
Joseph Saley.
New classic Tetris world champion, taking it away from seven-time champion Jonas Neubauer. The young kid on the block. He has done it. Unprecedented results here.
Jonas just looks like his world has ended after seven straight championships. You know, that eighth one, so elusive.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? Jonas was getting laid on the regular by all the Tetris whores.
Yeah,
well. And now the Tetris whores got to wait till this kid becomes a year older to go after him. That's how I think. That's just something I'm going through over here.
Yeah, I know, I know. God.
All right, we'll go from one crazy thing to another crazy thing. We're going to stick with video games. Elon Musk over the past weekend comes out on Twitter, says he bought Fortnite and that he deleted it. How amazing is that? How amazing is that troll?
God, that's...
I just think that's so crazy. He's the Tesla CEO. He tweeted out a doctored screenshot of a MarketWatch story claiming that he deleted Fortnite.
God, so many people, their lives would be ruined. Ruined, I tell you.
Unbelievable. So the whole entire thing is, you know, he wrote, "I had to save these kids from eternal virginity."
That's funny.
And he quoted himself, Elon Musk.
So funny.
And then he wrote, "Had to been done, you're welcome." Which I don't think is proper English. Had to been done? Isn't it had to be done?
It had to be done.
It had to be done.
Right.
He wrote, had to been done. And then he wrote, you're welcome. I mean, if you're the CEO of a major, major company, maybe English might be, you know, an attempt. That's right. Just me.
I've never played Fortnite, so if you have, tell me about it, because I've never played it.
It's a first-person shooter, you know, you're doing your whole thing. But the greatest thing is, Fortnite would not be trolled. They came out and they said, Elon Musk predicts when SpaceX will build first base on Mars or whatever it was, and he said 10 years. So they wrote to, they added Elon Musk, and they wrote, a whole decade, Elon Musk? Just build it. So they're
very true.
They're coming back at him. So it's pretty tremendous. It's a back and forth.
You should ask Bachelor about that. Will we have life on Mars? Life on Mars, yes.
He doesn't like Elon Musk. He won't even talk about him.
I won't talk about
him. He won't even acknowledge him with a thought, which is a little ridiculous.
Elon Musk is Michael Conforto. I do not pay him any attention.
Let's talk about...
My Bachelor's getting better.
It is, actually. Let's talk about something that we might not want to pay any attention to. And
Michael Conforto?
Not Michael Conforto, but the movie Men in Black is being redone.
It's
being rebooted.
Why?
Now, let me ask you a question.
No reason.
How do you not reboot this movie, or how do you not start from where you were with Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones and just go?
Because people are out of ideas.
But I don't even understand that.
Because that's just what we need.
How are you doing that?
I have no idea. You know what really needs a reboot? A Star is Born.
Well, they already did it.
No. I'm talking about the reboot to Lady Gaga. So now Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga did it. Let's do another reboot of A Star is Born. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I
Men in Black, how old is Men in Black? When did Men in Black come out? 97, 98, 99? And that, I mean, give me a break. Give me an effing break.
I just think that the whole entire deal is the fact that... So Chris Hemsworth is in there, and then they got...
I'm just glad you said his name right.
Tessa Thompson in there as well. Both very, very good actors. And I believe that... Like, why do you need to do it? Why do you need to reboot this movie? There's zero reason why you need to reboot a Men in Black movie.
Men in Black came out in 1997, okay? Then, I want to say Men in Black 3 came out in 2012. All right, that's 6-7 years ago, depending on when this movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm sorry. Movies that are 6 and 7 years old do not need to be rebooted. They do not. Continue the story. We talked about this about Ghostbusters, and while I thought the movie with the female cast was good,
mm-hmm.
It wasn't going to win an Oscar, but I thought it was good. I thought Kate McKinnon, I thought Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, and Leslie Jones, they all did a wonderful job. But for me, like I said on this podcast, I would have made it where they were the daughters of the original Ghostbusters. And I don't know if that's because, why does it have to be a man thing? Why can't it be? You know, who knows? In this day and age, are they trying to be super sensitive? But it would have been fun to see the daughters of Venkman, Stantz, Egon, and Winston Zeddemore.
Right, which just didn't happen.
Right. Yeah. It's one thing. Hey, our dads, you know, with they got all the ghosts and now the business suffered, or something happened like in Ghostbusters 2 where they said, you know, the Ghostbusters stopped being successful, stopped being popular until they ended up saving the city from whatever the evil creature's name was that was terrorizing the city. But do something like that where it at least has some sort of acknowledgement. Don't you think it would have been cooler to see like, hey, this is Peter Venkman's daughter who decides that she wants to reopen the family business with the friends that she made growing up who happened to be the daughters of the Ghostbusters. And Ecto-1 is hiding in a garage somewhere. Instead of having to go find a new car that was a hearse and all that, you know, go find the original Ecto-1. That's the car. You have a whole great unveiling segment, and that would have been chills for moviegoers who were fans of the new Ghostbusters, all female cast, and the old Ghostbusters, all legendary, comedian cast. And these women are legendary comedians too, in their right as well. But there's just something about reboots, man. I mean, we really should talk to your buddy, who's the movie critic that we have, and you know, for me, reboots are just trash. That's it.
Right.
End of story. You want to remake, you know, they remade King Kong. I'd rather watch the original. I'd rather watch the original.
No, I hear you. I mean, listen, it's just the fact of, you know, why do we even care at this point? We'll see it when it comes out. Here's the next thing we want to talk about. Luke and the Force. So they're saying now that Luke faded away into the Force. And Mark Hamill came out the other day and said that the Force killed Luke. And that the Last Jedi comic book adaptation, did you see when that came out, The Last Jedi?
No, I have to check that out.
So they came out with the comic book of The Last Jedi.
Right.
And they say that he, like, evaporated into the Force. Like, he said that, like, the Force was an addictive drug and that the Jedi isn't dying, but it's actually starting a bigger spiritual journey. Kind of like what, Yoda did, or Qui-Gon, or whatever.
It's an energy field.
Right, or Ben Kenobi, or something like that. But, like, isn't that
surrounds
a huge cop-out?
Binds us.
Right, but isn't it a cop-out? It just, Mark Hamill came out and said this. He said, the Force killed Luke. You have to acknowledge the irony in his fate. Almost like an addict that kicked his habit cold turkey, remained clean for decades, only to reuse it just once, then tragically overdoses. That is the biggest pile of dog shit I've ever heard in my life. Am I wrong?
He's trying to be cryptic, I would assume, because he doesn't want to give too much away. I'm sure, like Harrison Ford was when he was on a bunch of TV shows, who was reluctant to, or not allowed to even talk about Star Wars.
Why
so.
Would you even say something like that?
Because he's giving people a tease of, hey, I'm still in these movies. I'm going to probably come back in some sort of spirit form the way Ben Kenobi did in Jedi and Empire.
Which is fine, but they're going to do like another episode 6, which Return of the Jedi.
Right.
And I think they're going to mirror the same thing. Like, Luke is now going to teach either Ben or Rey the Force. I got to be honest. No interest. Almost zero interest.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to go see the movie.
Of course,
Kathleen
of course.
Kathleen Kennedy's going to get my $16. Don't you worry, Kathleen. You're going to get my money.
You know, it's weird. I don't know if it's because we get older, or at least I've gotten older. I remember when Star Wars, the original three, Star Wars A New Hope, Empire, and Jedi, came out.
Right.
Okay, not the first one, obviously. I was very young, but I remember the toys. I remember the commercials for the toys. I remember the movie trailers. I remember when Jedi came out in 83, and you would, oh my God, Luke has a green lightsaber. Luke is dressed in all black. He has a glove on his hand. He's fighting Darth Vader. There's the Emperor. Who are these little Muppets that are running around that look like little baby bears? Are they related to Chewbacca? The feeling you got when you saw the original trailer, it was amazing. The hair on your arms stand up. Well, I didn't have hair on my arms at that age, but you know what I mean. You get excited. Mom, Dad, when are you going to take me? Mom, Dad, can we go see Star Wars? Mom, Dad, when are we going to see? Now these trailers come out, and don't get me wrong, when I saw the first trailer for The Force Awakens, chills, goosebumps, because of the way it starts, the music's the same, everything was just wonderfully done. Wonderfully done. But now there's so many ways. We didn't have social media back then. So you didn't have these advanced copies, these interviews. You know when you saw interviews with stars on Entertainment Tonight?
Right.
And that was
it.
Or
the TV Guide.
Or the TV Guide newspaper. You would read things. Like I could remember reading, you know, a cousin was telling me a review or, you know, some behind the scenes stuff of Rocky IV. Mm-hmm. And that's when you find out Apollo Creed gets killed in a boxing match. And you're thinking, oh my God, really? That's really going to happen? Then the trailer comes out some months later, and you just see this fight between Apollo and the Russian, and all of a sudden it's like, ooh, that doesn't look like it's going to end well. And you know, going so on and so forth. I mean, I feel like I've taken this in a different tangent, but I don't know, man. I just don't get the same vibe that I used to when these movies drop.
Well, yeah.
And when these trailers drop.
It's just dog shit.
Because there's so many critics. There's so many people who like it. I like to just be my own critic. I will go watch. The one thing I can't stand is when someone says, hey, do you watch this show? They say it's great. Well, who's they?
Mm-hmm.
Critics? I don't like to be told what to watch. I like to be recommended. If I ask you for a recommendation, hey, what should you watch? You should really watch, you know, Doctor Who. You should really watch this. You should really watch. All right, I'll take a shot at it. And if I don't like it, I'll be the first one to say, yeah, you know, I liked it. I watched it. It wasn't really me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I just get so sick and tired of, you know, some people are purists and they want to stay so true to the movies. And other people are like, oh, they should have done this. Oh, they should have done that. Oh, it's like being a sports fan. Yeah, it's easy to spend everybody else's money. They should have signed this player. They should have signed that player. But when you know it's not financially viable and it doesn't happen, you get disappointed and you curse your owners.
Yep.
I just want to watch these movies and take it for what I think it is. I liked Solo. I liked Rogue One. Mm-hmm. I thought they were well done.
Mm-hmm.
Do they deserve an Oscar nomination? No.
I think they should remake Solo with
the Harrison Ford pixelated face that we brought up last week. That was fantastic.
That was so tremendous.
I sent that to about 12 of my Star Wars fan friends.
They were like,
oh my God, this is amazing.
They could literally re-release the movie in the theater with him as the lead.
I do feel bad for the kid who does play Han Solo.
I don't feel bad for him at all. He had his time in the sun. You can't, listen, if you're playing Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And Jesus comes back, Jesus has to play Jesus. It's the, you know what I'm saying? If you're playing Jesus on Broadway and the real Jesus comes back,
you
got to give it up to Jesus and be like, yo, JC, jump on in.
It's like Along Came Polly.
Exactly correct.
When Philip Seymour Hoffman's character is like, no, I'm going to play Jesus. Or I'm going to be Jew, but you're not supposed to sing that song. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
But, you know, fingers crossed, we see Luke return as a Force ghost in Star Wars, you know, Episode 9, which is set for release on December 20th, 2019. So we'll see what happens.
I like that they drop these movies all around Christmas time, though.
Well,
so it's like
stupid.
It gives you something to look forward to. They know everybody's home.
They're not stupid.
They know everybody's home from school. All their friends are going to go geek out and watch these movies. And hey, let's go.
Of course. Well, we'll see what happens. Right now, let's get to John Batchelor and talk to him, ask him a couple questions. What do you think?
What do I think? I think you're a lucky bastard because I actually have to run. I had a prior engagement that I'm running to, mm-hmm. and it fell in the window of when Mr. Batchelor can record. So, hi, John. I have to run, but it's great to see you. So, here's John Batchelor with Chris.
There we go.
And now it's time for news on Pop Culture Meltdown. It's A Bite with Batchelor, starring John Batchelor. Let's eat food and get knowledge.
John, we're going to talk to you about geometric shapes today.
Yes.
We're going to go from the diamond to a rectangle to something else.
We've had our bite with Batchelor. We ate ice cubes.
Yes.
So we're going to discuss. We're going to discuss an iceberg that might be a signal about the World Series.
Well, listen, let's get right to the World Series.
All right.
Game one's going to be when? Tomorrow night? This is going to be taped on Tuesday. Airs Wednesday. Game one is tonight.
Correct.
Okay, so by the time this episode has hit the stands, the newsstands, so to speak, this will already have happened.
What will happen is that the Dodgers are going to walk all over the Boston Red Sox.
Really?
Why do I know this?
Talk to me.
Because I'm in New York with Yankees fans.
Right.
Who are suffering.
Yeah.
The the two teams the Yankee fans despise more than any other two teams mm-hmm. are the Boston Red Sox and the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah, you can't root for the
Red
Sox. For
the Yankees to be sitting in front of their television sets watching this is painful. But for Yankees fans, this is like living in Hades for seven games. All right. So I figure the only way to relieve Yankees fans is to have the Dodgers win. Why? Mm-hmm. It's geography. Boston's closer. So the unhappiness is stronger.
True. And I think, you know, the Dodgers are due. But, I mean, you look at Boston, they're amazing.
I understand, but it's amazing. pitching.
Very true.
And the Dodgers have one weapon that nobody can defeat. That's Kershaw.
True. And then, you know, God knows what Sale's going to do. You know, hopefully it does well. But
Price can be beat. It's in his head.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has good pitching staff. You don't get into the show without it.
Right.
I just go with the brand itself, Kershaw, mm-hmm. and the man wants to perform. This is his moment.
That's true.
They got a guy named Puig mm-hmm. who stole the show against Milwaukee.
Tremendous.
They got a guy named Machado who all Yankees fans believe is already in pinstripes.
Oh, forget it. I know.
Just already. Yep. So we're looking at this entirely from the point of view of, not even as Yankees fans, we're looking at this from the point of view of Mets fans. If you think Yankees fans are suffering, imagine how Mets fans are watching this series.
I could speak personally as a Mets fan, and I will tell you that I'm rooting for the Dodgers.
Yes,
because that's my West Coast team. I mean, I used to watch Vin Scully. You know, after the Mets were over, I'd turn on Vin Scully on the West Coast feed and hear him do the game, and it was like the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. Obviously, he's gone now. Charlie Steiner now does the away games, the whole deal. But I mean, I just the Dodgers are my West Coast team.
Also, as a Mets fan,
yes,
admit the fact that the Yankees fans love you for one moment in history. 1986.
For taking Boston out of it.
Yes.
I would totally agree.
And so the Yankees fans are willing to give Mets fans a pass in a city where there is no mercy in baseball.
And there's no crying either. No crying and no mercy.
Oh, the Yankees fans are weeping.
Yeah,
that's
rough.
The moment this series goes on, there's weeping.
They're in one of the circles in Dante's Inferno right now, all the Yankee fans.
It reminds me of the war between India and Pakistan mm-hmm. back in the 1970s when Kissinger turned to Nixon and said, can they both lose?
He should have talked to Reggie Jackson on that one. So let's go from the diamond, and now we'll go to the rectangle.
The ice cube.
The giant ice cube, right. And NASA photographed a perfect rectangular iceberg. John Batchelor, what is the reason for this?
It looks like a pound cake.
Yeah.
Right. And how do we get a pound cake? Now, the NASA scientists are giving us all this mumbo jumbo about, we've seen this before. It's called a tabular iceberg.
Okay.
There are two kinds of icebergs. There's the one that sank the Titanic, mm-hmm. which is mean and with edges underneath.
Right.
And it looks like a mountain.
Right.
And then there's tabular icebergs. This one looks like a pound cake. The kind of pound cake that you'd write Dodgers on the top of.
It almost looks like it was put in an ice cube tray and then taken right out.
So is this a sign from beyond that the Dodgers are going to win?
Interesting. Could be. I mean, it's in the Weddell Sea off Antarctica.
Right.
And it's just floating.
Right. It's new. That's why the edges haven't worn down yet.
Interesting.
Wind and tide mm-hmm. will wear it down and turn it into Titanic iceberg.
So John walked in and I asked him this exact question, and I'm going to ask it to you again, John. How do you get such a perfect square?
All right. Because it is as likely to get an obtuse angle as a square.
Okay.
Right. As a right angle.
So it's like tree falls in the forest.
Right.
Doesn't make a sound. Same kind of deal.
And icebergs have figured out, so have the aliens that send messages, that we don't notice the obtuse angled icebergs.
Very nicely done.
We just say, a regular iceberg.
Right. Okay. I mean, it's all fascinating. I mean, you know, the icebergs breaking apart.
It's a mile. It's a mile across.
It's a mile long.
It's big. It's an island.
I'm just fascinated by it.
We should technically call it an ice island, not an iceberg, but it's going to break into bergs.
That's a good point.
Right.
My question to you is, do you think, obviously, has anything to do with a global warming?
No.
No. It's
better
just
metrics.
Natural.
I don't buy the warming for another 300 years.
Okay.
Well, check with me then.
Yes.
We just started our stats. The planet moves, changes. It's been a lot warmer.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a lot colder.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the warm. Us warm-blooded creatures prefer the warm. So if I had to go in two directions, I'd say we're going on the right one right now.
Okay.
The oceans are warming. Mm-hmm. By the way, I've learned that that means the great white sharks are going to feed in closer to the shore.
Because it's warmer.
Great white sharks do not like human flesh. It tastes bad to them.
Right.
That's why when you hear about great white sharks biting human swimmers, they don't eat them.
Right. They just take a portion of the leg and they go away.
Yeah, and that can lead to bad consequences.
Interesting.
But what they're actually doing is fishing. And some nearsighted great white sharks figure a guy swimming looks like a jellyfish.
Hmm.
So they come in closer. And that's why we're seeing more incidences of great white sharks in off San Diego County and off of Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
Why Cape Cod? Thanks to the environmentalists. They've restored the gray seal. Very beautiful on the shoreline in Cape Cod. If you see a gray seal, don't go swimming.
Because they're going to be attacked by the sharks.
Because that's a safe way to a great white shark.
Here's also my question about this iceberg. So they say that you see 10% of the iceberg,
correct,
visually.
Correct.
So under that, right, what has frozen under, like obviously it's frozen, it's dead, it's not coming back, there's no regeneration of that. But can that release things that have been frozen for so long?
No, it's just the surface.
Okay.
Just the surface. Antarctica is a continent.
Yes.
About a kilometer, sometimes 2 kilometers down,
mm-hmm,
is a lake and mountains. So the top layer has just been laid down the last, I don't know, when did I read? 35 million years. That's all.
Okay.
I think I've got the range right.
Right.
Antarctica is not older than 35 million years.
Mm-hmm.
The Atlantic's 125 million years ago.
Okay.
So these are recent events. If you're sitting around in the cosmos as an alien,
as an observer,
watching
yeah.
us, you figure, yeah, these guys don't know anything.
Right.
You know, they're reacting to something that's only 35 million years ago.
Right. Okay. So that was just, I just wanted to ask that question.
I hope I have that right. I'll correct in subsequent conversations about the Mets.
Of course.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. We'll do a subtext
right,
under that.
Right.
So let's talk about the Museum of the Bible, right? They come out and
in
they
Jerusalem.
Say, in Jerusalem, yes. Not New York City. They say that the five most famed artifacts that they have, treasured artifacts.
They have 16 pieces from the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Right.
And five of them are the question.
And they say that they're fake.
Yes.
What goes on with that?
They brought in a team from Germany, and they declared that the papyrus, the manufacturing, is inconsistent with the age that is necessary for the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Right. So they did the carbon dating
yes,
kind of a deal.
And the Museum of the Bible is very well done, but mm-hmm. it's a tourist attraction.
Right.
It's not the thing itself. I was invited to view the thing itself in one of my visits to Jerusalem, to go to the archaeological department of the State of Israel,
mm-hmm.
where they enhance and work on the Dead Sea Scrolls, the real thing.
Amazing.
They're made on leather, shoe leather, the kind of things that you make sandals out of.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gorgeous, but they're fragile, and they restore them very carefully. And in the restoring process, there has been damage. They found them in the late 40s, over the last 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is very carefully done. The pieces that are at the Museum of the Bible, there are more pieces to be found. They're finding them all the time because there are lots of caves out there.
Mm-hmm.
So all I can add at this point is that researching and finding what is real and what is not is an important part of archaeology.
And do you think that the reason, you know, they came out fake is because they just, you know, whomever found it wants to just make up their own
stories? Do you remember
stories?
The story of the Dead Sea Scrolls? They were found because they were being sold in the marketplace. I mean, it was kind of amazing. They had these things. Where did these come from? So they want, I think I remember this. I don't want to tell too much detail because I haven't read it recently.
Right.
And then they found a cave and there was more in the cave, and they're always finding, they found recently more of them. So they're more out there. They were not put there to be found 2,000 years later.
Right.
They were put there because the theory is they were under attack by the Romans, and they needed to hide their most precious pieces of archives, their most precious archives.
Mm-hmm.
So they put them in urns and put them in the caves. They are very near where the original people who had the Dead Sea Scrolls live very near them. This is near the Dead Sea in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So they were a temporary hiding place, but the people who put them there didn't come back. So we believe that it was all an accident, and we're still finding the remains of the accident.
Right. It's kind of just haphazardly, put this in the cave, quick.
Right. And the joys of it is that you're finding ancient Hebrew, and you're finding how the texts in the Bible are consistent with what the Israelis had. This is the Jews before the Romans wiped them out in the revolt of 66 to 70 AD. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I'm getting too far out without having read this. I don't want to go into too much detail. Stop encouraging me.
Yes, listen.
Right, let's go back to the Mets. But in any event,
right.
Finding fakes is part of archaeology.
Of course. And, you know, I mean, they said that this this family, billionaire Steve Green, they amassed a private collection of about 40,000 right. biblical artifacts right. and manuscripts.
Right.
So now that's saying you have to almost wonder if what he bought is real.
There was a market, and people are taking advantage of markets
right.
always.
Like you have, you know, to validate this, obviously it's carbon dating. There's no Steiner Sports that comes in and says, that's the Derek Jeter ball that he signed after the 86 or 96 World Series.
My memory is that this is leather. Leather was the writing material. Papyrus wouldn't have held up well.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how they're dating it. I didn't read the details of it. It's just that they've confirmed 5 of the 16. That means 11 are good.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
So we're good.
Yeah, if I had one, that'd be spectacular.
They said that they used 3D digital microscopy, scanning X-ray, fluorescence, and energy dispersive X-ray spectroscopy.
Right, 2,000 years from now. 2,000 years from now, they will be able to tell from our bones mm-hmm. who the Mets fans were and who the Yankees fans were.
Who was actually at Citi right. Field to see Johan Santana's
Mets
no-hitter.
Fans had to generate this adrenaline in order to get through the season.
And this dopamine to deal with the season. Right,
right exactly. And the arguments about DeGrom left these scars on their
amazing.
Tissue.
Amazing. Right. And then they won the World Series. So you know, they show the exuberance right. level.
Yeah, so if you're a Mets fan, it will be revealed 2,000 years from now.
Well, I'm sure the future aliens will be very excited.
And remember,
excited.
The tabular iceberg has Los Angeles Dodgers written on top.
On the front, like a cake.
Yes.
John Batchelor, thank you as always.
Thank you, and we will correct errors in future.
Yes. So, Louis, I get to talk to John, and you don't get to talk to John, but now all of a sudden you're back. I mean, it's the power of a podcast.
Well, the funny thing is, I've actually learned how to talk like John.
Oh, so, look at you.
So I can talk to John whenever I like. Michael Conforto, we need to put him into space and never let him come back. Maybe he could run around the rings of Saturn.
That's a whole deal.
Yes.
It's a whole deal. Well, right. on this past episode, we talked Tetris, we talked Fortnite, we talked Men in Black, we talked Star Wars. We
talked about my anger of reboots
talked
again.
Your anger of reboots.
Again.
I mean, I'm just stoked for your boy over here, Joseph Saley, who's
that was
16
epic.
Years old.
That was
and
epic.
Is now the, what is it, world champion?
The world Tetris, classic Tetris champion.
Champion. I mean, he could walk into a strip club and 9 or 10, maybe 11 waitresses in there will be very excited about that.
But he
that.
Would just have to stack them a certain way and get them all on the
you.
Line.
Look at Louis making the jokes. Hang That's up. Tremendous.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening to Pop John Culture Batchelor. Meltdown.
John Batchelor approved. Yes.
Give us a rating on iTunes. What is it? 5 stars?
Yes, 5
is that what
stars.
It is? That's
yes.
what we want?
5 stars. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. 5 stars, preferably. But we're not picky. We'll take 4, but 5 is the... I mean, look, it's easy. It's 1 click. I mean, come on.
Fantastic. Really. We have great guests coming up. We don't want to tease it just that because we actually want to get them confirmed, and then we'll tell you. But until then...
See ya.
We'll see you Friday morning.
Yes, you will.
Pop Culture Meltdown.
If you'd like to email the show, email popculturemeltdown@gmail.com and find us on Instagram at popculturemeltdown. Find John Batchelor on The John Batchelor Show every weeknight on Westwood One and follow on Twitter at The Batchelor Show. The voice of Pop Culture Meltdown is Dan Kelly, voice talent and one of the best human beings on the planet. For bookings, go to dankellyvo.com. Special thanks to myself, producer Laura Ponte, our graphic designer Ricky Soto, Tim Einkel with OG, and of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Rudsky. This has been Pop Culture Meltdown with your hosts, Chris Libertini and Lou Pellegrino.
They are intelligent. They are smarter than the most up-to-date supercomputers. We cannot underestimate it.